Welcome everyone to this week's episode of the Currently Nerdy Podcast. We are a political, comedic, and current events podcast where we give you a nerdy outlook on what's going on in the world today, giving you a look inside the inner conclave of nerdom, and we're here to take over the world in our nerd imperium. So hail the Currently Nerdy Empire.
Hail.
We get this podcast to you free every week on CurrentlyNerdy.com and on iTunes. So please rate, review, and subscribe, and fuck you, Ali.
Take forever to introduce us.
Kiss my ass. Anyways, we are your hosts of this podcast.
Said it takes a long time to introduce.
It's been 52 seconds.
He said fuck you before you said that.
Because he was sitting there fucking doing some voodoo Muslim magic on me, saying like alhamdulillah or something.
Wait, what?
I heard you
that voodoo whispering. Muslim magic.
I whispering. Rolled my eyes is literally what I did.
He rolled his eyes and he said la hamzubillah.
It's what it is. It's racism.
He said la hamzubillah. Check the tape.
I heard that was a Mandingo death curse.
What is that? What does that mean?
It means your dick about to fall off.
See, look over here, man. He's over here shouting these Muslim curses at me. I hope Donald Trump deports you when he becomes president.
You're going first. You look more Muslim than I do.
Yeah, but you're the one who writes articles about Islam.
Right? Yeah, but he doesn't read. Yeah, the benefit of the fact that no one in his campaign has ever read anything.
I've probably gambled at one of his casinos.
I'm pretty sure you're going to go.
I'll take a shot with
you him. You're going to go before I go.
I'm more susceptible to eat bacon than you are.
I can pass as a Greek.
Plus, Ali has money.
I can pass as a Mexican. It's not going to work.
You're really fucked.
You're broke and you have a beard.
I'm not broke, motherfucker.
Finish the introduction.
You're your host. My name is Diz. I'm your pop culture and sports nerd. Fuck off. Ali, go ahead.
I'm Ali. I'm the classic nerd.
The triple B that broke, brown, bearded.
Shut the fuck up and tell them who you are, you piece of shit.
My name is V. I cover all the other shit.
Yeah.
You would be the first to go.
First off, I'm not broke. I'm in a higher tax bracket than you, motherfucker.
No, you may make more money, but you don't actually have a net worth.
That's true. I spent it on hookers and cocaine like a real American.
It's like you don't have... I mean, what was it, last year we set up your savings account?
2 years ago.
When I worked, jeez, really?
Yeah, when I worked at Verizon.
He's 30.
I'm 27, god damn it.
You have 30. A savings account?
I didn't have one until 2 years ago.
Cold ass out.
Do you have any, like, are you involved in the market at all? Or like,
What happened was?
I have a checking account. I have a savings account.
I do now. At the time, I had a checking account and a checking account. And that's it. I was like, hey, I got money.
It was always at a negative.
It wasn't at a negative.
Before that, it was in a Nike shoebox.
It's true. It's been a Nike shoebox before, I'm not going to lie. Under my mattress. It's been there.
He's a Great Depression style.
Yeah. I don't trust the banks.
He lives like a poor person.
I don't trust the banks.
So he is broke. I'm absolutely correct.
Mentally, I'm broke.
He's depression era broke.
My bank account shows otherwise. But I always feel like I'm broke.
Depression era.
Because I got a champagne taste. No, I don't.
On a Budweiser budget.
I don't got champagne taste. I don't. I got a Jameson taste. And I got a Jameson.
Taco Bell and Jameson.
It sounds like my fucking ideal Friday night.
And like, if they ever wrote an autobiography of mine, it would be called Chalk and Almonds, The Life of Ali. Because I always have chalk and I always have almonds in my pocket. If it was you, it would be Taco Bell and Jameson.
That sounds like a hell of a fucking read.
Being Depression Era Broke, The Life of Diz. That's your autobiography. That's not your autobiography. That's your biography.
Yeah, I wouldn't write that shit. Yeah, it would say Taco Bell.
Taco Bell and Jameson. The great, Being Depression Era Broke.
No, man. The great
the life
downfall,
story.
The great downfall of Diz.
The life story.
The expected downfall of Diz.
The great downfall. The downfall implies that you were up at one point.
I'm all the way up.
You were never up. What would your biography be? What would his biography be called? I'm asking you. What would his biography
his
be called?
His biography would be called Porn and Spider-Man.
What?
Porn and Spider-Man.
Why Spider-Man?
The sticky situation that he's been in.
Fair enough. I'll give it to you. Well done. Well done.
I'll allow it.
That's gross, but true. I was just telling my friends the other day about you being caught in the Egyptian revolution.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, this moron knew there was a revolution going and still went.
I'm telling you, he fucking captured Morrissey. Not Morsi.
Morsi.
Mubarak? Mubarak.
Mubarak, the one before.
And it's not Morsi, it's Morsi. Yeah.
Morsi.
Morsi is a musician. It's a musician.
The Doors. Not the Doors.
That's an actual music. Yeah. It's actual Morsi. Band. It's called Morsi. Yeah. Yeah. Whatever, man. Mahmood.
Hosni Mubarak.
Hosni Mubarak.
Mahmood, yeah. Morsi. Mahmood, is that his name? Sounds Muslim enough.
Speaking of Mubarak, it's for those Muslims out there, it is actually Eid.
Yeah, I hope your lamb that you slaughtered made you feel
Eid
good about
this
yourself.
Time was like, it's especially awkward for for Muslims because it came on 9/11.
No, it came 9/12. We changed it.
They changed it, but it was actually 9/11. So you can imagine Muslims were very uncomfortable. Like, any minute now, Donald Trump is going to tweet out a picture. Look, they were celebrating on 9/11, right?
Brother, you think it will be appropriate if we change the Eid so this year to 9/12?
They moved the day. They went, We're not taking the risk.
You know, it's even worse is that now someone would be like, you know, they knew that it was on 9/11, and now they're being suspicious. That's why they moved it.
No, brother, it's not what happened. See, you know, in Saudi Arabia, the guy, he thought he saw the moon, but he did not see the moon.
It has also became... So it's now Eid. And, you know, during 9/11, or the anniversary of 9/11, it's been 15 years for the record.
Yeah.
I watched the documentary on it. It was like being there all over again. I remember when I was saw it, I watched it live happening because I had a tendency, when I came down to prepare for school... I was in high school and I watched Timon and Pumbaa. I'm not gonna lie about it.
Jet fuel doesn't burn steel beams.
I would watch Timon and Pumbaa before getting ready to go to high school, and my mom had the news on, and I saw the second plane hit like live, and then we ended up going to school. Miss Croy had the TV on.
Crazy.
We were watching.
I remember that.
So like watching the documentary, I'm like, oh my god, it's been 15 years. But every anniversary, there's like a terror alert goes up. Like people are nervous. The terrorists are gonna try to commit other acts, right? After all, Benghazi happened during 9/11.
It did.
It did. But what's often kind of not reported about 9/11 is also is a spike.
That it was an inside job?
It's an anti-Bush did 9/11. That it's also there's a spike in anti-Muslim violence. Like serious violence.
Dude, it was bad.
And this year in particular was pretty bad. They burned down the church, or they burned down the mosque that Omar Mateen attended. Omar Mateen is the Orlando shooter. They burned it down. Some guy came in a Harley Davidson. Was wearing a bandana around his face so they couldn't see it. He came in with some type of flammable material, threw it and left and burnt down the mosque in New York City. A woman was actually set on fire.
Yeah, oh my god.
Deplorable.
Yeah, they literally set her on fire. And in England, what happened is that a man came up to a Muslim couple, hit the husband over the head with glass, and kicked the woman in the stomach.
She was pregnant.
The woman was pregnant and lost her child.
Holy shit.
Yeah. So it was a rough couple of days for Muslims.
Yeah. But you know, white people, you guys are being oppressed and whatnot.
It was also at the same time Kerry and Russia had negotiated a deal in order to have a ceasefire in Syria, which is kind of breaking down as we're talking about it. So we're monitoring the situation. It's a rough, this week has been it's one moment you're remembering the tragedy that is 9/11. On the other moment, minority community, the Muslim community is being attacked.
Yeah.
There's
all
sorts of shit going on.
But you know, Ali, it doesn't give the right to these football players to kneel during the national anthem on September 11th. Because Kate Upton, she's a fine American woman who's dealt with all sorts of hardships in her life, and she knows.
I thought Kate Upton was like, is she American?
Yeah.
For some reason, I thought she was European or Brazilian or some shit.
No, she's...
As far as I know.
Yeah, you know, Kate Upton, swimsuit model.
I could have sworn she was from another country.
You know?
But that's just me, right?
Yeah.
A woman who's never had to deal with anything in her life was complaining on Twitter. Because you know Ali.
Yeah, but I wouldn't go so far as to say a woman who's never had to deal with anything in her life. I'm sure she's got things that she's dealt with personally. I just think she was on the wrong.
Like what? Which fucking shoes match her dress for the red carpet?
Okay, yeah, let's not be sexist. On, second of
fuck
all,
fuck her.
We don't know what she's gone through in life. What I find
she's gotten her nudes leaked. That's pretty bad.
Okay, come on, stop.
That's bad.
We that don't know what happened, but what we do know is what's going on in her life. But I think she was wrong on that tweet. I think Soledad O'Brien called her out. You can be proud of this country and still want it to improve, right?
No, absolutely. Ali, America needs to be great again.
For the record, America's form of patriotism is very third world.
Yeah.
And I say this, you know, fully understanding third world's come an offensive term, but you don't see this nationalism in a lot of developed countries.
Like England?
It's like this religious nationalism.
Yeah, there's two countries in the developed world that really have this type of nationalism and patriotism. One is France. France is a very clear, but France is not, it's not a patriotism thing. It's an elitist, we're better than the universe thing.
Mm-hmm.
And America.
Yeah.
Most other countries that have this type of, like, you have to worship the state and the flag are generally dictatorships and failed states.
What about the Brazil?
In general, most countries don't have, like, England doesn't have it. Germany's not like that. Like, Germany's like, yeah, Deutschland. You know, it's like
they only care about their football.
Yeah. But
then again, though, historically, I mean, they know what nationalism is.
Yeah, well, the response to nationalism, one of the reasons also why is because of the EU, right?
Yeah.
They saw how dangerous nationalism was. EU is a response to nationalism. They said, we're going to pool our sovereignty into a collective that's bigger than the nation state, right? Mm-hmm. That's what the EU fundamentally is. A lot of people forget that. That's how the EU developed. It wasn't just them going, hey, we're all going to be European. It was this moment where Europe went, wow, nationalism nearly destroyed the world.
Yeah.
We're never going to go through that again. So we're going to adopt this pan identity, which is interesting because it's actually a lot older than the national identity. It existed actually before nationalism did. We see in 19th century in the Middle East, Al-Afghani, for example, is one of the first that talks about this idea of going, the nation state is flawed. You have to have this kind of pan-Islamic
identity. What about, like, what is the Delian League like that too?
The Delian League is sort of like that, but Delian League was about producing a hegemony, not an identity, right? Yeah. So the issue is identity, right? So the politics, there's always been kind of overarching politics. Empires are like that, right? Empires, by very nature, are cosmopolitan.
Yeah.
They don't give a fuck where you were born. They don't give a fuck where you're from. You're Roman.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They're not particularly big on, like, unique identities. They don't care.
Yeah.
But it's when that overarching ideology merges into personal identity, right? So when you become the nation state, I am American.
Yes.
Right? That's when we have an issue. And it's interesting because America is kind of unique in that regards. And again, France is like that, but not the same. For France, it's much more cultural.
Mm-hmm.
Our culture is better than yours. Our values are better than yours.
Yeah, everything.
We're smarter than you. Yeah. Our language is better than yours. It's like that type of thing.
Our women.
Whereas for America, is much more assimilative and or integrative than France is, right? Like, we're very open to accepting other cultures and whatnot. But
we
have this very bizarre nationalism to us. You have to be respectful of the flag. You have to love where you were born. But it's weird if you think about it. It's pride in something you literally have no control over.
I don't get this bullshit.
You know what I mean? Like,
you have no control over being born here.
You could be proud of all the accomplishments you've made. You could be proud of a lot of different things. I was proud that I made those cookies where I was like, look, I did it, right?
Yeah.
But it's like, I'm proud that I popped out of my mom in a particular place. You know what I mean?
You know, like, you should, I mean, you really should thank your mother for being here. Not so much the state.
Yeah. I don't,
like, you chose a location, so I appreciate it. Right?
Like, this false, like, nationalistic shit. I don't understand it. Like, yeah, I'll root for, like, the U.S. soccer team and shit, and we're in the Olympics.
Well, you got, see, the thing is, the reason why nationalism exists is it's fundamentally meant to be productive. It creates group solidarity. Now, the funny thing is, there's all sorts of theories about nationalism and where it came about. One of the most famous kind of theorists about this, there's a bunch of them, right? Anthony Smith is really famous. He wrote a book called The Beginning of the Nation. He wrote, or Birth of a, not Birth of a Nation. I think it's Beginning of a Nation.
Birth of a Nation?
Yeah, not the Birth of a Nation. Beginning of a Nation or Nation of Nations. And The Ethnic Nation, that's the other one he wrote. And his argument is that the nationalism is born out of what's called the ethne, right? Which is basically like a rudimentary ethnic community. Then the most famous of the kind of theories of nationalism is Benedict Anderson. Benedict Anderson wrote the book Imagined Communities. And his argument fundamentally is that nationalism produces an imagined community. That we're part of this imagined community of what is called America. You're from Virginia, I'm from California. thousands of miles separate us, but we can say, I'm American, you're American. We have some form of communion between us, right? Some form of communal experience that is America. Now, he argues in his, there's a part of his thesis that's somewhat overlooked, is that nationalism replaces religious identity. And that what he argues, the reason this happens is because of the what's called print capitalism. Mm-hmm. When you have the printing industry, print capitalism, publishing books and at a mass scale, it starts to shift from a elite group of people who know the sacral languages like Latin and Greek to everyone who speaks a vulgar language. So the identity shifts. So it goes from church identity to linguistic identity. And that linguistic identity becomes the root of nationalism. All Americans are English speakers, right? That type of thing. And that it, by replacing national, by replacing religiosity or religious identity, it fulfills the same function, right? No other ideology other than religion and nationalism can motivate people to go kill themselves for it.
That's true.
Think about it. You die for your God and you die for country. Nothing else, right? Yeah. No one is dying for lowered health care. You know what I mean? There's no one
sacrificing themselves for like poor people.
Yeah. There's no other kind of ideology out there that you go that sports. I will kill myself. But see, sports is nationalistic. It's wrapped up in Americana, you know, Americana.
Yeah. Well, it's the same as like whenever you refer to the Dallas Cowboys, you say we. Right. Yeah, like you're or when any team. Mm-hmm. Referred to as we, as opposed to the Cowboys.
You die for God and country. There's nothing else. If you, I almost haven't. Like no one's ever said, you know, I fucking love Sufi poetry. I'll die for it. Like, no,
yeah, yeah.
There's no other equivalent.
I mean, family too, right? I mean,
family blood, comes
familial
close.
Familial ties, right?
Family like, comes, but family's not. Is not an ideology.
Yeah, it's true.
Right? It's right. not. It's kinship.
Yeah, yeah. Right. It runs in a kind of a different.
It's very different.
Yeah.
God and country are fictitious bonds.
Yeah.
So you're saying God isn't real, bro?
Well, fictitious in the sense that they're imagined.
Yeah, well, it's like because they're created so by the state, essentially.
You're praying
right?
to an imaginary God.
The interesting thing is also that with the relationship with God is technically vertical, right?
Yeah.
That's how the nation, that's how kingdoms are born, right? God authorizes it. The nation state is fundamentally horizontal. That's we're all part of the nation. We're all American. But now this is where the problem comes in. What if you don't fit that definition of American? Are you no longer it? Colin Kaepernick, he doesn't stand up. Is he now not part of the nation?
Yeah.
And according to the Kate Uptons in the world, yes, he's no longer American, right? Which is interesting because that fundamentally, that shows how dogmatic it is, right? It literally ignores the very principle Americanness is based on what? Life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, freedom of speech, liberalism, etc. You can express that, but if you do so in a way that violates the dogmatic definition of American, flag, the state, the troops, then it doesn't matter if you're following the principles of the nation.
Yeah.
You're no longer part of the nation.
But, you know, how is that any different from, you know, the First Amendment versus like, the First Commandment?
Right.
You know, thou shalt not kill, right? Like, it's like, well, it's negotiable. You know, so long as it doesn't fit in, you know, in
the same thing with the Colin Kaepernick thing, right? All of a sudden, his Americanness is negotiated.
Yeah.
Because he's not filling in for, he's not doing the rituals.
Yeah.
So now that's interesting, right?
I actually got in an argument on Facebook with someone about that. Something that was long.
Really?
Well, about 9/11.
About 9/11.
Because someone had posted up a picture and said, you know, this is to the 300 some odd deaths at 9/11 and the thousands of Iraqis that died as a result.
I've seen that,
right? And then she goes in this very impassioned, long-winded paragraph about, you know, I'm not saying that the war was right or wrong, but it's easy to point fingers, you know, when your families are being destroyed and this and that and all this other stuff. And, you know, I kind of went, listen, I understand. I had friends and family in the East Coast too, right? And I was worried. But you're essentially just saying that the death of these poor souls in 9/11 somehow justified the deaths of the thousands that are continuing on in the Middle East right now as a result of a completely irresponsible occupation of a country that was proven by the UN Security Council that had nothing to do with it.
Yeah, I mean, today even Republicans admit, and why is Donald Trump so popular, right? He's one of the few Republicans that go, that was a disastrous war. Everyone's come to the conclusion except that, that war was bad.
Yeah, and her her argument, which annoyed me because I broke it down, distilled it for a little bit more. But she's essentially saying, we were attacked on our soil. What did you expect us to do? Just sit back and do nothing?
Yeah, but you do realize we attacked Afghanistan first. Like, there's a country between us and Iraq. Like, we first invaded Afghanistan, and there's CIA operatives that are coming out going, we could have defeated Al Qaeda in 6 months.
Yeah,
had we not diverted attention to Iraq.
Because they told her, I never got an answer for it. Okay, yeah. I was going, okay, so let's say you're at a Starbucks, right, and some random person threw milk at you. Right? Do you start punching everyone that you see and go, well, someone threw milk at me. What else was I supposed to do?
What did you expect? We got milk everywhere.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm like, it's such a moronic thing to say. And I understand emotionally it's hard, but just to start lashing out at brown people.
But see, like, that's the thing. Here's the thing, right? This is the evidence that I'm arguing. This gives a perfect example of it, of nationalism being a form of religiosity that is ritual based.
Yeah.
Right? So you have two forms of religion, anthropologically speaking, right? And back me up on this.
Yeah.
There's what's known as state religion. This is what comes out. Now, mind you, this is very Western centric, right?
Yeah.
Obviously, this type of definition, this is why we have a hard time talking about Muslim terrorism, because our definition of religion is different from Hinduism, Judaism, and Islam, and other religions, Confucianism and Buddhism. They have very different forms of religion than our ideas of religion, right? Or Western ideas.
Insanely complicated.
Insanely more complicated, right? But in the Western notion of religion, there's kind of two forms of religion, and this comes out of the Roman tradition.
Okay.
There's what's known as religio or religio, right? That's state religion. That's official, like, state functions. The emperor sacrificing a ram, the emperor putting red on his face, the Pontiff Maximus casting the auguries. These are state ritual acts.
Okay.
They don't. You don't have to believe anything. You have to perform them.
Okay. Yeah.
Performing them determines your loyalty to the Roman state. In fact, when you don't perform them is when you demonstrate that you are no longer part of the Roman state. This is why, in some ways, state religion is also can be somewhat pluralistic in that they don't give a fuck if you're Jewish or Christian or any other religion as long as you perform the state sacrifices, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Then there is what the private religion in Rome called the Leares, right? And this was the worship of the ancestors, the house god known as the house genii.
It's like
right?
private altars.
Private altars. You had a shrine in your home. And you worship. That's your belief system, right? How this developed in Christianity in the Western world is that eventually you had a divorcing that happened between religion and state. Not an easy one, not a clean one. This is not secularism. And this is the case I've made in my classes often when I teach history of religion, is that secularism and nationalism is not the removal of religion. It is the transforming of the state religion into the religion of the state.
Religion of the...
Right? The state becomes the religion. That's nationalism, right? God becomes America, right? The priest becomes the congressman, right? Et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Now, as a result, because you have this division, in this religion of the state, that's nationalism, America is the best. You can be, I worship Allah, I worship Jehovah, I worship Christ, you can worship anything personally. You could believe anything personally. But you need to perform the state rituals. When you don't perform the state rituals, you are no longer part of the state. It's why you can believe that the Iraq war was bad, but you can't post about it on 9/11 because you're violating the public state ritual of mourning. You can say America is bad, your country is going to hell, as Donald Trump is saying over and over again, but don't sit for the national anthem because that's a public state ritual. So my argument is fundamentally that because our nationalism is a form of state religion, it's embedded in empty ritual. The ritual is more important than the personal belief. You can exercise your right to free speech, great, but it better not violate the state ritual.
Yeah,
that's why Colin Kaepernick is in the conundrum that he is.
Well, here's the thing.
He may be doing the most American thing in the world, which is dissent.
Yeah. Peaceful dissent, too.
Peaceful dissent. Peaceful dissent. But he's doing it by violating the public state ritual and therefore committing the most profane of acts in the minds of American dogmatists.
So here's the thing. My buddy posted something about Kaepernick, and this lady commented saying, it's not right for him to disrespect the families of the 9/11 victims. You know, this this issue that 9/11 is more important than what the cop issue that's going on, right? Mm-hmm. That's what she said. Mm-hmm. His response, I felt, was brilliant. Mm-hmm. He said, you taking offense does not mean that the offense was giving. You're choosing to say his sitting disrespected victims. Like it or not, the injustices all of us are talking about are happening right now to children, teens, men, women of color, all over the nation. What you're saying is that it's not important because people died on 9/11, which was a tragedy, but it's not what the flag represents now and only represents. The flag has been there and stood for a lot more than what happened 15 years ago. A Muslim woman was just burned in the streets of New York City days ago, and people who did it under their pride for the flag. It's supposed to represent U.S. Not a day in history, not a tragic event, but us as a country. So you can feel it's not right, and you can feel disrespected, but you can't say it was just because you don't agree. The most ignorant response to a protest is a person can say is the most ignorant response to a protest a person can have is to compare it to a different topic. If I say McDonald's always gives me only cold coffee, doesn't it sound stupid for you to just tell me, well, just go to Burger King instead? Like, why should I be the only one to get cold coffee? It's a stupid problem to have.
It's also fundamentally the argument is you can't love this country but hate the people in it.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Like it's a weird conundrum, but it's apply to a religion.
It's such a simple, I mean, it's so simplified. It's overly simplified, it is though. Overly like, simplified. I mean, the state of itself. I mean, when the state becomes the immutable truth,
yeah.
It's really funny because we rally ourselves as kind of the bastion against communism, but the state being the immutable truth is what.
Well, that was the threat of communism, right? Is that the communist state is an equal power.
Yeah.
That right. It's not because it has a different economic system, right? It really doesn't matter.
Yeah.
What matters is that it is equally as powerful in its ideological solidarity as nationalism, which is also why when communism falls, now what's the big threat? Islamic fundamentalism, right? Because it is the other ideology now in which people are willing to die for.
You know what it is? If it wasn't like the complete East, like with Russia that scares us, it's the Middle East that scares us.
Well, here's the thing. Now, the funny, I mentioned how the theories of nationalism, right? Mm-hmm. These theories were actually all, in my opinion, far more accurately resolved in the 13th century. Ibn Khaldun wrote the theory he called Asabiyya, social solidarity.
Yeah.
It's actually phenomenal. I think
notes about this.
Yeah, you were in that class. Asabiyan tribalism, I think, answers this more effectively than nationalism does. But that's just my own personal pet peeve. Anyways.
You would go to the Muslim scholar.
The point I'm trying to make, though, is we talk about it, but now apply it to religion. Let's say you're a Muslim, right?
I am.
Let's say you are.
Sacrifice a lamb.
Your personal beliefs are not that important.
No.
But if you would eat pork publicly in front of your mom, what would happen?
She would slap the shit out of my mouth.
So the public ritual of being Muslim,
yes,
is more important than the personal belief. That illustrates what I'm talking about when it comes to nationalism, right? Uh-huh. It doesn't matter if you care America's great or not. The same people that are like, you need to stand for the religion are stockpiling guns to overthrow the government.
Stand for the country.
Right?
Stand for religion.
Stand for your country, right? Are the same people that want to overthrow their government, right?
Yep.
They're the same people that are like, fuck Barack Hussein Obama.
Yeah.
But how don't you dare speak ill about the flag? You see what I'm saying? This is why the best lens to look at this to understand it is not just say, oh, well, it's nationalism and nationalism is contradictory. Is to understand how this is rooted in the division between personal belief and public acts of loyalty, between private religion and state religion. When you put it in that lens, you suddenly understand the Colin Kaepernick thing perfectly. You get what he's doing and why what he's doing is so effective.
I like it. Yeah,
yeah. If he personally says, I oppose police brutality, it's not nearly as effective as saying, I'm not going to stand for the flag, because that causes the outcry. That causes the outrage. And that's what protest is. Protest is something subversive. It's disruptive. There's nothing more disruptive than saying, I refuse to make sacrifices to the emperor.
Yeah. Charles Woodson, who is a NFL commentator now and like former NFL player, said it brilliantly. He's like, because this guy, Trent Dilfer, is stupid. He's just like, well, why wasn't he saying anything a couple of years ago when he was a starter? Blah, 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 blah. You're a backup. Just shut the hell up. And Charles Woodson said, it doesn't matter what he is. Mm-hmm. He's like, what's the point of a protest? He's like, to get us as much attention as possible. Mm-hmm. And what is he doing? He's getting as much attention as possible. He's like, for you to, you know, like, disregard what he's saying because you don't share the same experiences that he does is ignorant. You know, like, and he went at him for it. Like, you can't disregard someone's experience because you don't feel like you don't have the same thing. Like, hey, if I can't say that pepperoni tastes like shit because I've never had it, but V says it's delicious, then in his experience, pepperoni is delicious. In my experience, I don't know what it tastes like. For me, it tastes like shit. But I can't say that he's wrong to say that it's delicious, you know? And it just makes no sense how you could just, like unless you share the experience, you can't really talk about
it. But not everyone's experiences are considered equal is the problem, right?
No, it's because, you know, 3/5 lives don't matter.
It's true. Oh, wow. It's true. I mean, like, the reality is, I saw this recently when I was watching on Donald Trump's surrogate debate a black Clinton surrogate, right? Mm-hmm. And the black Clinton surrogate is going, no, you don't get it. And she kept repeating, well, no, the Democrats haven't helped you. Your lives are this, and your money is this, and your inner cities are this, and African lives are this, and African-American lives are this, and da-da-da. And she kept repeating, and he's going, look, you can't speak to my experience. But in her mind, as a white woman, she had more right to speak about the black experience than the black guy did, right? This speaks to the fact that not all experiences are considered equal in this country.
Well, you know
country.
What it is? She read the book Push by Sapphire, so she knows.
Speaking of kind of protest, there is also currently a very big protest against the pipeline in North Dakota.
Oh, yeah,
Standing yeah. Rock, Sioux Tribe is standing up, and they weren't getting that much attention at
Dude, they
first.
They sent fucking dogs out on
them. Originally, weren't getting that much attention, but they were out there, and it was the largest gathering of the First Nations in 100 years or so. Right,
yeah, yeah.
They hadn't gathered in this amount, and then it started getting national attention because Amy Goodman and others went there. You know, you had the Comedy Central go there. A bunch of people went there and started highlighting what was going on. Because originally it was just focusing on the protesters being disruptive, and it wasn't covering the fact that the oil company had hired private security guards that were releasing dogs and pepper spraying and all sorts of things. But now it is getting the type of attention that it should be getting. It's still not enough. You generally have like one segment of the news cover it, and then they won't speak about it for 12 hours. You know what I mean?
Naturally.
But it is a big deal. The Obama administration has moved on this matter. The Department of Justice and the Army released a statement basically stating that they're not going to go through with they've suspended the construction of the pipeline because the judge didn't find in favor of the protesters.
Yeah, yeah.
So we'll see what's going to happen. It's still an ongoing situation. Jill Stein got in trouble. Jill Stein is the Green Party candidate.
Mm-hmm.
Spray painted one of the tractors.
She did?
Yeah, and so she's now there's an arrest warrant put out for her. There's also an arrest warrant put out for Amy Goodman from Democracy Now.
Yeah, for recording it.
For recording it, because they're like, oh, criminal trespassing. That's very scary because it just shows you that they're trying to tamp down on free speech and the freedom of the press.
Of course, no, but it's our PC culture that's trying to.
Of course, it's
oppress,
PC culture.
Press
not corporations. We've talked about this before, right? It's not the corporations. It's the PC people.
It's the Tumblr people. Yeah. You know, the SJWs.
Yeah, you fuckers and your PC, and I can't say the N-word anymore, and I can't say the F-word. I hate you guys.
Well, you know, I mean, Trump did say that he was going to shoot at Iraqi ships, but, you know, no one seemed to mention any of that
stuff. No one mentioned this. We're going to talk about this in a minute, but before going there, I really want to highlight that this is a story that's just been mostly ignored.
Yeah.
All right. That this is something that we need to bring attention to, and the argument fundamentally is: would we allow a pipeline to go through Arlington Cemetery?
Nope.
No, but that's what this is going on here. These are ancestral burial sites of First Nations, right? This is very important for me. Water is more important. This is water access. It's going to mess with all of that. It's got environmental implications. It's got cultural implications. It's got political implications, and it's not being paid attention to. And this is the issue of the press, right? Is what catches attention in the media and what doesn't.
Pneumonia.
And what V brought up is fantastic. So on September 9th, Donald Trump, before his rally goers in Pensacola, Florida, said that if Iranian ships made gestures that they shouldn't be making, he would shoot them out of the water. Now, we know that because reporters had filmed him, right? They wrote down what he said, and they put it out on Twitter. Not a single one of them covered it, though, on CNN, on New York Times, Politico, anywhere. It was just not covered. Now, here's the thing. That's a war crime.
Mm.
This is now multiple times that he's admitted openly that he would use a war crime. One, he said he was going to take Iraq's oil. That's a war crime. Then he said that he would shoot Iranian ships that made gestures at him. That's a war crime. It's called the war crime of aggression. And the media didn't cover it. But guess what they did cover?
Pneumonia.
Pneumonia. So Hillary Clinton got sick on Friday. She went to a doctor, apparently had pneumonia. Thought she could push through it. On Sunday, went to the memorial, got heat, you know, overheated and nearly collapsed. They had to like carry her into the van, and there's video of this, right? And of course, the Hillary health conspiracy theorists felt all vindicated. We were right, we were right. Well, all to be embarrassed when her doctor came out. It's like, no, she's got pneumonia.
Yeah, and
like
morons,
like women, like most women, she thought she could go pile through it, right? This is a big responsibility for her. She pushed herself to go through it. She worked herself too hard. But they turned this entire conversation into, well, Hillary Clinton didn't tell us she had pneumonia when she found out on Friday.
I'm sorry.
First of all, we have a right to the doctor's note. We don't have the right to have all of her health information.
Seriously.
There are still privacy rules. I mean, people forget when FDR had polio, there was a rule about never showing him in his wheelchair.
Yeah.
It was a rule. The press knew. Everyone knew. It was not a secret.
Yeah.
But it was a matter of respecting his privacy.
Yeah.
And so even if she didn't tell you, that's not, who cares?
She's not transparent.
But they made it into a transparency issue. Well, it shows that they're not transparent. I'm sorry. When the media deliberately decides that the pneumonia story needs coverage, but the other candidate promising war crimes doesn't need coverage,
yeah,
then it's no longer false equivalency like we mentioned last week, because last week we made the case that it was false equivalency. Now it is outright failure of the media.
Yeah.
It is incapable. The media, Donald Trump has fantastically exposed the flaw in the media, that it is corporate media and beholden to ratings and advertisement, is now incapable of doing its fundamental role in society, and that is keeping us informed as a people.
It's really sad to think about, the fact that something like a personal health issue would be in everyone's mind. I mean, it's like, what's sad is, okay, do you remember when hashtag shout your abortion was trending on Twitter?
Yeah.
And a lot of people who were against it were like, you know, a lot of people were like, why are you even... like, this is a personal health issue. Why the hell are you mentioning this? You know, it's like, it's not anyone's business. Why are you mentioning this? And now Hillary has pneumonia, and they're like, oh, you know, she didn't tell us. It's a transparency issue.
This is the most Republicans have cared about women's health since forever.
Yeah, you stole a joke from Twitter.
I did.
Patrick Healey, who, by the way, was one of the people who I consider part of media malpractice at New York Times, who wrote at 10 a.m. wrote one thing about Donald Trump's trip to Mexico, and by 10 p.m. had to literally rewrite everything because of how bullshit his article was.
Yeah. Pat Healy, also decent fighter, but lost his bonus for smoking marijuana.
Patrick Healy, different guy.
His name's Patrick, yeah, too.
Patrick Healy, outright media malpractice, right? New York Times, in my opinion, though, when you see these events where not only are they going false equivalency, let's look at the Clinton Foundation, which may not necessarily look good, and that's not true. They haven't done anything. Versus Trump Foundation, actual crimes committed.
Mm-hmm.
These two both have an issue. One, you have a candidate who's released all of her required documents, her 30 years of tax returns, her medical doctor's note, right? All of that. And then Donald Trump, who's released none of that. And they go, well, both of these candidates have a transparency issue. I'm like, no, motherfucker. One of them has a transparency issue. The other one just doesn't do it to your satisfaction.
Oh, yeah.
There's a difference, right? Your defensiveness about Hillary Clinton is showing. right? She's already released her tax returns. Donald Trump has not. But they go, do both of these candidates have a transparency issue? It raises questions, right? They do. Yeah. These are what I call weasel words. Cast doubt, casts a shadow, raises questions, right? Absolutely no rationale for it, no justification, but they use these weasel words to plant insinuations, right?
Yeah.
So first you have false equivalency, but now you have a very clear evidence that not only is it false equivalency, trying to create two separate things that are not remotely the same as equal, now you have an outright evidence that they are failing to do their most simple task, report the facts. They're unable, if they're unable to tell the average, because the average voter is not in Pensacola, Florida at Trump's rally.
Yeah, yeah.
So if the media doesn't tell us this guy is promising war crimes, something that no one else has promised, no presidential candidate in modern American history has promised to take us to war. None of them have. Even the most warmonger from McCain has never said, I will take us to war. But this guy is promising us we're going to go to war with Iran. Right? Promising World War III, and the media doesn't report it. Now we know that corporate media has fundamentally failed. I think like the question we need to ask is, what do we do now? If our media is no longer informing us, and don't get me wrong, this is not like a new thing. This has been building up to this moment.
Yeah,
it's been getting worse and worse and worse, but now we've come to the point where for a long time we've realized that media is part entertainment, part news, but it's been shifting more and more towards entertainment. But now we're seeing what the cost of that is.
Yeah. Well, George Carlin actually, he was doing a bit in the 80s. He was talking about Ronald Reagan and his, and he was talking about the Vietnam War as well as the war in Iraq. And he goes, you know, the media was, in this case, was the unpaid employer of the Department of Defense.
Right? Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you know, it's like this, it raises some interesting issues because the question is, the media, quote unquote, like these are American news stations.
No.
So where do their loyalties ultimately lie?
Well, here's the thing. Their loyalties, that's what I'm saying, is right. Yeah. Their loyalties lie with what? Well, ratings and advertising. Yeah.
So the thing is, like, what was it? Almost 12, 13 years ago, Immortal Technique came out with a song called The Fourth Branch.
Yeah.
Referring to the fourth branch of the government. Well,
it's
media.
A play off the fact that the media is called the Fourth Estate.
Yeah.
Right? And then there's the three branches of government.
Yeah.
Now, the fourth idea
branch is the military.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's what he was just calling it.
The fourth estate is meant to be the check on the government. That's the job, right? They've failed repeatedly, and it's from the 80s. This is where I trace this history, right, of the media shaping.
Reagan?
It starts with the McLaughlin Group. I mean, I don't want to bore everyone with, like, the long history of it
and Fox News,
but sometimes we'll talk about it someday, right?
Fuck.
How this eventually happened, but we don't have enough time to do it today.
Good.
We'll talk about how the media eventually came to where it is today. But it started off going, okay, we need to be more entertaining. We can't just report the news. That's not bad, right? They were trying to be competitive because as you have more and more media outlets spring up, they're competing for ratings. They're
fucking 24-hour news network,
right,
bro.
So they need to keep it entertaining. The problem is when it started to shift entirely towards entertainment and less towards news. When that happened, they become unwitting or witting, I don't know which, helpers, or complicit in the government. They're no longer checking the government. We saw the most, I think, obvious example of it within our time period is the Iraq War, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Iraq War was the moment, and there was a reckoning. After the Iraq War, media got together and went, wait a minute, we fucked up. We did this wrong. We should have asked more questions. We should have had more follow-up. We failed the people because we allowed this to happen. We didn't ask about the weapons of mass destruction. We didn't do enough. In fact, they were cheerleaders. I mean, Thomas Friedman very famously wrote, this is a war of choice, right? The Iraq War. And now we look back and go, oops. But the thing is, they did this reckoning, but they didn't learn from it.
Nah, bro.
We continue to become more and more reality TV. And now the result of that, the consequence is not just that we went into Iraq. The consequence now is that we're about to elect
Donald Trump,
an orange dictator. And when he gets elected, and I'm not saying he is, but even if he loses, the damage is done.
Bro.
We're going to look back and go, he was made possible because nobody asked him a question because they were afraid that he would say, all right, I'm banning the press. Yeah. All right, I'm not going to answer. They needed the ratings. They needed Donald Trump more than Donald Trump needed them. And so they were afraid to push back. Matt Lauer not calling out, wait a minute, Donald Trump, you lie. That's incorrect. You were for the Iraq War. Didn't say that. Asking very simple follow-ups. Wait a minute. Did you just say you're going to shoot Iranian ships? Fuck follow-up. Fuck false equivalency. Just report it that he said he was going to shoot Iranian ships out of the waters if they made rude gestures at him. You're telling me that it's not important for the American voter to know that we have one candidate promising outright war?
But you know what I heard? I heard Hillary call half of Trump supporters deplorable.
Which I think, by the way, may end up being a very smart tactic for her.
Because, you know, she was wrong.
Because, so here's what she did.
Because 75% of them are deplorable.
So on Thursday, last Thursday, at a fundraiser, she said, you know, just to be generally, grossly generalistic, she prefaced it. Let's be clear.
Yeah.
You could put half of Donald Trump supporters in what I call the basket of deplorables, homophobes, Islamophobes, racists, bigots, it's misogynist, et cetera, right? She walked back the half. She didn't apologize for the statement. And I think I know why. I'm not, I think this may have been a lure. Because it's not the same as Romney's 47%. Romney's 47% proves that he has contempt for poor people. Mm-hmm. Hillary's 50% claim or half basket of deplorable proves that she has contempt for racists.
Yeah.
Donald Trump has been pushing this, we're not deplorables, we're proud to be deplorables. He's been running on this. But Hillary Clinton just released a statement using his own words against him where he said, again, this is where the media feels like, where is someone that goes, this is insane? Donald Trump demanded an apology for this statement for the record. He goes, while we're giving out policy and substance, Hillary Clinton is dividing the country, saying divisive things, saying offensive things. I went, hold on.
Wait, what?
Does this man have zero self-awareness? Mm. He actually had the gall to say, she's being divisive. We're talking about substance and issues.
I'm not surprised. Like, is it that surprising, though? Because the people that are following him anyway... Already, they can leave. Like he said, like he himself said, he could shoot someone in the middle of the street, and they would praise him for it.
You know, the funny thing is, he used that exact same comment about Hillary Clinton the same night that he talked about shooting Iran. Yeah. He originally said, I could walk out on Fifth Avenue, shoot someone in the chest, and I wouldn't lose a single voter. Yeah. He then followed it up this Friday, saying Hillary Clinton is so protected she could walk in here, shoot you in the chest, and she wouldn't be charged. He's literally, this is a man who, and I think I've learned what he's doing. His ghostwriter, Tony Schwartz, is the only man I've seen calling his ass out. Yeah. He goes on the media and he calls his ass out, and he said something. Every time he says Hillary Clinton, substitute Hillary Clinton for Donald Trump, and you'll realize what he's doing, he's projecting.
Uh-huh.
When she called him unfit, he calls her unfit. When she says that he's saying racist things, she says that she's saying that it's his defense mechanism. It's his way.
I'm rubber. You're glue.
He projects it, right? So he's now claiming this. Never mind the fact that she's put out 45 policy statements. He's put out 9. She's put out 112,000 words on policy. He's put out 8,000. So he's put out a high school essay. She's put out a dissertation, right? Yeah. That's the difference, right? Forget setting all that aside. Setting that aside, that complete bullshit that somehow she's the one being divisive, she released a video where he said, after the deplorable comment, he said, if she can't respect all Americans, she can't be our president. This is something she herself had said about him. Mm. If she can't respect all Americans, he can't be the leader of all Americans, right? So he repeated that phrase. She put that in an ad where he says, if she can't respect all Americans, she doesn't deserve to be president. And then followed it up with every single clip of him making fun of Americans. Americans are stupid. What is wrong with these people? The reporters, I don't know, mimicking the handicapped reporter. Every single, like, it was, I suspect that deplorable's comment was a bait.
Yeah.
I don't know if she's this diabolical at it.
Hook, line, sinker.
But I think that this was a bait. Just like they baited him with a tweet. Yeah. She said, a man you can bait with a tweet is not a man you can trust in your codes. The next day, he literally tweeted out in a flurry of insanity, proving her point, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think this deplorable thing that he's pounding on, she wants this debate. If you're going to get in an argument about deplorables, she has a whole archive of shit she can pull from. So now, if this becomes a race about who is more deplorable, guess who loses?
Yeah.
This is the moment where we look back and we go, Hillary Clinton made one of the worst calculations in her life. She made a mistake. She shouldn't have said that. like we looked at the 47%. Or we're going to look back and go, like, that was bro. Fucking politically genius. She lured his ass into a... Because he's painted himself into a corner.
Well, I also think that she also... They understand fundamentally what the right latches onto. And it's buzzwords.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, patriot, freedom, Benghazi.
Yes.
Right? Emails like these. So they latch onto single things, right? So that word specifically she uses. Yeah. And then she can use as her own weapon because then they're going to try to arm it.
Yep.
Right? And it's really funny because... This is the schoolyard equivalent to you making fun of that kid who isn't that smart. So he just yells, no, you, every time you call him something.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. You're absolutely right about that.
You know, so it's just like...
Because they're doing it. They're now wearing shirts called Basket of Deplorables. They're owning that thing. But that's not a... And the reason I suspect that is that Brian Fallon, and who is her campaign media out person, right, tweeted out, he keeps repeating the Deplorables comment. He's out on the branch, sawing the branch off. And I went... These fuckers put it. I think they let him paint himself into a corner, and now they're gonna hit with that. If they keep up that ad, and then they hit him with it in the debates, I think that this may have been a very clever tactic because it's also forcing the media. I think she also understands because there is a double standard, right? She acknowledges it. Even the media themselves are acknowledging that they've been a double standard. They've been grading Obama. They've been creating Trump on a curve. President Obama today in Philadelphia said the same thing. He said there you cannot grade the presidency on a curve because they have. And so the media recognizes this. But guess what the media has been doing? They may not be talking about him committing war crimes, but they're now talking about the deplorables comment.
Yeah.
And you have people going, well, guess what? 60% of Donald Trump supporters think that
Barack Obama is a Muslim.
57% think that
he wasn't born in America.
That he was not born in America. 50% have negative views of African Americans by saying African Americans, more than half, think that African Americans are more violent. 70% think that Islam is incompatible with America and should be banned. They're now having the argument about it, and the reality is what? That the facts are there.
Yeah,
it may not be the politically right thing, the wisest political thing in the world to call voters deplorable, but it's also inaccurate. It is accurate that more than half, not she was generous, not half, more than half have deplorable views. And then Mike Pence comes on CNN and they go, David Duke is applauding you guys. Do you think that he's deplorable? And he goes, well, we don't want David Duke. We reject him. But I'm not in the business of name calling him. I'm not going to call him deplorable. And Hillary Clinton responds on Twitter, if you can't call the Grand Wizard of the KKK deplorable, you can't run this country. I do think that she is painted, that this was a tactic. She may be out on pneumonia, but this may have been a political stratagem. Boom. I'm not sure. This is a moment where we're going to look back and either go, oh, yeah, she was right, or, man, she was so wrong on
dopeness.
That. I do think that this may actually work in her favor.
You're sneaky
this,
little one, Hillary.
This thing that like they it. Talked about, that they were like, oh, it was a gaffe, it may turn out to be in her benefit. Well,
I think you realize that there's a point where her campaign understands how the media animal works, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, it's not a particularly complicated process. They just know... There are certain things that they're going to jump on with Hillary, and there's certain things they're going to jump on with Trump.
Yep.
What if we were to use that to our advantage?
Well, I think after the Matt Lauer thing, for that, and you're right, you're onto something. I think after the Matt Lauer thing, they realize they can't rely on the media in the way that in the past politicians relied on media to fact check.
Yeah.
Here's the reality: Hillary Clinton is considered to be more dishonest than Donald Trump. That's a fact.
Mm-hmm.
Most Americans think Donald Trump is more honest than Hillary Clinton, 35 to 50%. Even though Hillary Clinton has been PolitiFact, is a neutral, bipartisan, checks at the facts, she's considered one of the single most honest politicians that has ever run for president. Donald Trump, do you know how accurate he is? How often he speaks the truth?
Less than 50%.
7%.
Oh, shit.
7% of what he says, 7 to 11, depending on what
is
on
mostly
a day.
True.
7 to 11% of what he says is mostly true. That means that roughly 80, around the 80s, is how much inaccuracy and false statements he's making. And yet, the perception is what? Yeah. Hillary is somehow untruthful. So she knows.
Benghazi.
She knows that fact-checking is not working for her. She can't rely on the media to say, hey, wait a minute, Donald Trump lies more. Because they've normalized him. They've just accepted that he's going to lie. It's okay. It's Donald Trump. So I think that they, after the Matt Lauer, when they saw that Matt Lauer didn't fact check him, she's like, we got to do this on our own.
Yeah.
Right. I think they picked up on it and they've changed strategies. They're now being media and they're being campaign.
Yeah. Think about it now also, like, given our current landscape, societally wise, right? Yeah. You know, we've become so, I mean, we were always egocentric, right? But we become like hyper egocentric in this modern age. So things that we feel automatically become truths within the context of our own lives.
Yeah.
Right? So you're not going to inconvenience yourself with something like truth when you've already decided what the truth is already.
Of course.
So I mean that shows why Hillary is considered to be so untrustworthy, right? Yeah. There's no reason for her to be.
No. There's a name for it, you know that, right?
Sexism.
It's called Clinton derangement syndrome. Have you heard of this?
No.
They've now coined a phrase for this. Just mad, crazy hatred for her that's not actually based in fact. Yeah. And there's a guy who famously talks about this. David Brock was originally a conservative hitman. His job in the 90s was to basically take out the Clintons.
Yeah.
Right? And that was a lot of
good he did.
That was his job. That was his job. His job was to basically make stuff up. In the late 90s, 1999, about 2000, he flipped teams. He became
double agent.
He became what's now known as Media Matters. You know Media Matters, that website? Mm-hmm. He runs that.
Oh, shit.
David Brock, the joke is often that he went from conservative assassin to liberal assassin, or conservative assassin to liberal empire builder. Yeah. And one of the things he did when he wrote his book, he's like, yeah, we made up stuff about them. 99% of the stuff that has been said about them, completely false. He had like a come to God moment where he realized what he was doing was wrong.
Yeah.
Now he is the most ardent defender of the Clintons, going, we messed up in the 90s. We created this. And so he's now called Correct the Record. That's his pact. His job is to literally correct all the falsehoods about Clinton.
Wow.
Because he goes, the insanity about the hating them is completely, it's insanity. It's not based in fact. Don't get me wrong, Clinton is not a perfect candidate. I don't like Clinton as a candidate. She's not my ideal candidate. I disavow her foreign policy immensely, right? Mm-hmm. But the hatred of her is irrational. And David Brock is like the perfect example of a guy who recognized that, and now he's working on the other team, working tirelessly to say, this is all bullshit. I know because I used to be the one who made that stuff up.
It works interestingly with, I mean, I think it's a trend, right? It's all of a sudden, in your own way, it's almost like there's a certain solidarity with hating Hillary.
Oh, yeah.
You know, regardless of what side you're on.
It's easy to hate Hillary.
You do know that the majority of Donald Trump supporters are voting for him. 64% say they vote for him because they hate Hillary.
Yeah.
The people that are actually excited about Donald Trump register less than 30%. People are excited about Hillary Clinton. The problem is there is an enthusiasm gap too. Those that want Hillary to lose are more motivated than the people who want Hillary to win.
It's like wrestling. She's like the John Cena of the campaign.
This is also sexism too, right? Like, we often talk about Obama's a phenomenal campaigner and Hillary's not a good campaigner. We fall into this trap ourselves, right? And this comes from this kind of false gendered idea of what makes a good leader.
Yeah.
Charisma. They need to be this male, but it's a male form of charisma, right? It's not, very rarely do we call women charismatic.
It's true.
It's men that are charismatic. They're trying to think. We don't call,
even in wrestling, I'm trying to think who's the most charismatic woman. No, just wrestling.
Any public Sasha? Female figure that is considered a skilled female figure, we say other things about them. She's beautiful. She's smart. She's what? We don't call them charismatic. Charismatic is almost a male adjective.
That's true, because when you think charisma, you almost think this like John Draper.
You think Sinatra. You think like Donald Trump. Shawn Michaels. You think Donald Trump. You think Obama. You think people. Even Donald Trump, they talk about. He's charismatic. And they say she's not charismatic. And this talks about the sexism, right?
You're not pretty or you're not motherly.
Yeah.
There's really no
think about it.
Yeah.
This woman is the single most qualified candidate to ever run.
True.
A male or female ever to run.
True.
She has been first lady. She has been senator. She's been secretary of state. She was a civil rights lawyer, right? Yeah. It goes on and on and on, right? And we're saying that with all her credentials, her equal is a man who's never ran for a single office ever.
He's filed for bankruptcy.
He's a reality TV star. That's literally what we're saying. And yet, when you listen to the conversation, oh, well, Hillary's not really that much of a campaigner. Donald Trump, you know, you may not agree with him, but he's charismatic.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? So, like, there is a sexism in the way that we talk about Hillary. It's not just all media conspiracy. It's also outright sexism. Right? It is a double standard that is misogynistic. Hillary Clinton has pneumonia, but the fat ass who's 2 years older than her is healthy as a fucking horse. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
yeah. You just body shame Donald Trump?
I did body shame him very publicly.
Just talk about a small pickle.
I'm just saying that she somehow,
yeah,
when she, like, no one, the way this pneumonia story was told was not, dude, she had pneumonia, was wearing a Kevlar vest out in the sweltering 100-degree heat of New York with the humidity because she refused to stay home for the 9/11 memorial, and she's been keeping up an insane campaign schedule, never failing once, and she overheated. Damn, that's badass. She overheated. She's frail. She's weak. She's sick. Health concerns? Is she strong enough for the president? You see what, like,
bro, I can barely go to work when I have a hangover.
Dude, when I have a headache, I cancel class for a month.
Yeah, you've canceled this podcast. I've migraine.
Canceled this podcast over a migraine. Yeah. But you see what I'm saying? He,
pussy.
No one's asking him, oh, is he healthy enough? Yeah. Fucker eats KFC with a fork and knife. That alone should raise questions.
Trust him.
That alone should raise questions.
Trump is
For some reason, when we talk about her, this is what I'm talking about. You have a failure at the media level. Fuck, the media done goofed, right?
Done goofed.
They done goofed. They're now too busy sucking Donald Dick in order to report the news. Mm-hmm. Then you have double standards. Then you have sexism. It's a fucked up race, man. A fucked up race.
We're in a fucked up society.
You can't trust someone who eats KFC with a knife and a fork.
And on that depressing note, Diz, why don't you take his
pizza out? Backwards.
Fuck 26.
You read pizza. He ate pizza with a fork and knife too.
Yeah, see, no,
He ate it backwards?
Can't trust him.
Not just any pizza. I mean, you can do that with Chicago pizza, New York style.
With no folding?
That's fucking
blasphemy. And he's from New York.
That's blasphemy. We should be more angry about that than Colin Kaepernick.
You're a piece of shit.
That's the real American, fun American thing to do.
Fold that shit.
Eats Mexican food that has a wall built around it on Cinco de Mayo.
That's it.
Yeah. Eats nice pizza.
One of his campaign people said that if Hillary wins, there's going to be a taco truck in every corner. I hope so.
I hope to God there is. I fucking love tacos. God,
I would love for them to make a wall with that taco truck, too.
They should have built the wall while he was in Mexico.
It's that German boy.
We had a chance and we missed it.
I know.
And Mexico would have paid for it.
Mexico would have No, they wouldn't have paid for it. El Chapo we're not keeping his ass here.
Yeah, right.
Take him back.
El Chapo would have paid for
Kick his ass out of my country. Yeah. All right, Diz, take us out.
Facebook.com/CurlingNerdy. Go on there. Like our page, write in our wall, send us some private messages if you wish. We're on to tweets at CurlingNerdy on Twitter. Hashtag of the week this week is hashtag Spider-Man and porn. I like that. That was a good biography name for V.
Okay.
Or you could
the one thing you contributed to the podcast.
Or Taco Bell and Jameson.
Yeah.
Whichever you prefer.
Oh, I love how I'm just completely ignored in this. Fuck chalk and almonds.
No, you can't give yourself that. Fuck you, bro. Fuck chalk and almonds.
That was someone else said that. I didn't say that.
Well, I don't give a shit what anyone else said. We didn't say it. V, give him a biography name.
I think that's a legit one, chalk and almonds.
Well, I mean, it is true.
It is true.
Yeah.
Come on, let's go. Let's close this shit out.
Loneliness. I don't know. Like,
yeah. I'm more social than both of you combined.
Yeah, get the fuck out of here. I have 2,000 Facebook friends.
and yet you're alone drinking at a bar.
With friends. We're on the Tumblr. CurlingNerdy.tumblr.com. Go on there. Follow us. Do whatever Tumblr people do. Ship Ali and V. Make them do it and draw pictures of it.
What?
I don't know. What's wrong?
YouTube. Look out for a new YouTube video coming out soon.
Which he's been saying for 3 weeks now.
Shut the fuck up.
What is the Winchester brothers from Supernatural? Is that what the one that Tumblr's ship?
Tumblr ships everyone.
The Winchesters?
Yeah, everybody.
Valley.
Everybody.
Incestors.
You guys are together. Your ship name is
Can
Valley.
Can we go? Come on.
Valley.
Some of us want to end this podcast.
Fuck you. Currently already on iTunes. Rate, review, and subscribe, por favor. Give us a nice little rating and subscription, please. And if you want to get a hold of us individually, I don't know why you'd want to, but you can. V, tell them how to get a hold of you.
Or you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at VTran214. That's V Y TRAN214. You can also find me on my website, thesandwichslayer.com. Ali?
You can catch me on my website, alilomi.com, A-L-I-O-L-O-M-I.com, or on Twitter at A-A-O-L-O-M-I, Diz.
You can send me your nudes at Dizbullah. No nudes. D-I-Z-B-U-L-L-A-H. Send me your dick pics, because...
Everyone, for everyone here at Currently Nerdy, thank you for tuning in. Remember, stay smart, sexy, nerdy.
And we love you. Unless you fucking eat your pizza with a fucking fork and a knife, then go fuck yourself.